Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett, and in studio with me are certified financial planners Tyler Cook and Tony Payne. Today's a fun topic. We're going to talk about subscription services. This is something I don't know anything about, and in my research, I guess I should because it's everywhere, right? All over social media, people looking for ways, especially after COVID, to find ways to earn income. So we're going to talk about the financial growth in subscription-driven businesses, and I really want to kind of go into what they are first, to explain what they look like to the average person. And then we'll go into some of the financial strategies.
All right.
So what is it?
Well, it depends.
Wake up, guys.
Yeah, there's multiple ways you can.
Wasn't sure where you wanted to go with that
Yeah, there's multiple types of businesses within that broad category of subscription. So I think a popular one nowadays with the kids too is all, you know, everyone wants to be an influencer of some sort. Which, of course, why do they do that? Well, there's different income streams that come with that from subscriptions, whether it's ad revenue, people subscribing to a product or selling merch, right? Whatever it might be, there's avenues that are out there for people to generate income. So when people start going into that world, they're maybe not sure what the actual trajectory is going to look like, especially if you're brand new at it.
Yeah.
So the income consistency, or probably better way to say it is inconsistency, is something that has to be managed. And that ties back into what we speak about with cash flow. So having your ducks in a row with, you know, your income piece is important, but what goes along with that? How much do you have to spend to keep the money coming in, you know, to pay for ads and things like that? So there's financial planning around all of that, but I think the cash flow is the first thing to look at.
I can't even imagine somebody working a full-time job and doing something like this on the side. It seems like it would be a colossal commitment, time commitment, especially if you have a family or, you know,
But yeah, it doesn't have to be on the side either. I guess as we're thinking about this, we haven't framed it yet
right,
as something on the side. So whether it's a full-time gig as a subscription business and you've just modeled your business more as a subscription, when I was going through this, I couldn't help but think of some of the snow removal companies. You know, the opposite of the internet and the tech stuff we were going for. But you know what? If I only got paid when it snowed and I've got to run my business around that, my equipment, my insurance, that's a lot more difficult. And I know there are a lot of people that was how they were taught to run their business. But to be able to say, you know what? I have contracts, basically a subscription, so that I can count on that regular revenue and I can plan on that and I can plan my expenses. That's a more traditional full stream business there, but it's still a subscription. Mm-hmm. So the same ideas come into play there as much as, like you were saying, the influencer model and some of the websites you might be able to use as a subscription too.
All right, let's start at the foundation, kind of give people the building blocks. You know, you're thinking about it, you're I can't even think of a good example of a subscription service, maybe buying baby food, homemade baby food to have it delivered to your home might be considered something like that. What if I were at home thinking about starting something like this, where do you go? I mean, you go to an attorney and you have the documents. Is that the first place you look, or do you look at your financial plan first?
I think you start on the business side. What kind of structure do you want? What type of business are you trying to have? Is it just you? Is it you and your spouse? Is it you and a friend? Is it you and people you don't know? Are you going to have employees? I think the most of the complexities will be figured out as you go, but most people would start on their own, I would think. Mm-hmm. So a single member LLC type setup where it's very basic and generic, but again, getting your books in order first before the money starts rolling in, hopefully, I think would be the strategy to implement, because you've got to stay organized. In other words, you don't want to have all this money coming in from your subscription base going into your personal checking account.
Mm-hmm.
That parlays into just bunch of issues on the planning side.
So you definitely need a full team. You need the CFP, you need the CPA, you need the attorney, the insurance person, all those.
Eventually, pieces. I would say eventually.
Okay, so that's premature then to start going that far.
So I be careful how I say that. I don't think it's premature. I just think from the beginning, kind of testing, is this idea going to work?
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on what type of business you're in too. Like, do you have a lot of liability exposure with what you're going to be selling?
Mm-hmm.
That would push the conversation towards, yeah, start talking to an attorney right away.
Mm-hmm.
Versus something that maybe doesn't have those exposures. So like selling a t-shirt, for example.
Mm-hmm. What are the kinds of difficulties that you see or that you can think of that somebody might encounter if they want to open a subscription business in their life? If I were to ask you for maybe four or five hurdles that they might encounter right out of the gate to think about as they're planning for this, what would you say they would be?
Yeah, well, I know one is just, again, it's a business no matter what. So just going back to, it's a business and the idea that you've got to make a sale. There's got to be something there appealing to that consumer or customer. So with that subscription model, it's got to be an ongoing want. And that's the piece, too, where if you're fixing a problem one time, that subscription model may not align with your business or what you're able to offer versus, you know what, that's something we do need every month or maybe annually or something like that. Because, again, you can think of those bigger one-time projects that may not translate to a subscription model, but then others where, you know what, if I think of it a little differently, maybe I sell the water machine. But then the subscription model is the filter. Mm-hmm. And that's where you might still be able to adapt, I'll say, a more traditional business into a subscription model.
Mm-hmm. And that starts with a business plan, really, I think, first, right?
Another initial obstacle or something to overcome would be just the startup cost. Where are you going to get the money to do this? Mm-hmm. Probably going into debt right out of the gate's not a great idea. Some people have, and it's worked. But maybe are you going to ask family and friends to get you started? Do you have enough on your own to save from your 9-to-5 job to set money aside to fund this hobby, which hopefully becomes a business? But those are some big obstacles early on.
When thinking, too, the idea of what is it that you're going to sell? What's your product? Is it a service? Is it intellectual property? Is it a widget? You know, we use the famous widget there, but the idea of is it a good? Is it something that you're going to have to order or make from somewhere and wait on a lead time? Or is it something maybe already packaged up that, you know what, maybe I can repackage that a little differently, have the license to something, and maybe just rent it out, dare I say, and that's your subscription. So there's different ways you can structure this. So I think that initial phase of planning your business before you get into the, and again, we love getting the attorneys and accountants involved, but really sitting down to model the business to say, where are my opportunities? How am I going to serve people so that there's an ongoing need?
And that starts with, I think, it's kind of stepping backwards, getting real with your own personal financial plan. Let's give people the building blocks for that first as we kind of talk about this.
Yeah. What you don't want to have happen is this hobby that you may be considering turning into a business jeopardize the core plan. So you've got to have the foundational pieces still intact. Your cash reserve has to be there. Your liability protection needs to be there. You need to be saving for retirement, whatever that means to you. Call it financial independence. But if you can check the box on all those things first, then it makes it a much easier conversation to take risk with starting a new business venture.
And we have a lot of videos and audio about those topics that you can channel at a later time. Okay, so getting into some relatable questions. So if somebody's Etsy sales spike during the holidays, for instance, I'm just going to go right into it.
Yeah.
How do you plan for the slow months?
That's exactly right. Kind of like you were saying, the seasonality to the business is critical. So, and you'll see that even in like, use landscaping as a good example. Not everybody does, you know, cuts grass and then, you know, shovels snow in the winter. And then you're subject to, is it going to snow? Right? You still know here in Ohio, for example. So I think the idea just of getting started would be to make sure you have the right framework in place. And if you're going to set some money aside, you have to be disciplined. That's the key. And if you know your numbers, that makes it a little easier to say, okay, here's what's come in. I'm projecting the next 3 months, sales are going to slow down. First of all, do I need this money to live on? I think before that, even maybe taxes, Tony, right?
Maybe.
Make sure you're setting aside for the tax man, because that's going to happen at some point. So it really proactive planning throughout the year, not just kind of letting the calendar year come to a close and then revisiting what happened, but having regular meetings either with yourself or your advisors to make sure that you've got, you know, a beat on things, because things can sneak in there pretty quickly and you might be out of money before you know it.
So I've always wondered, and I think listening to you guys talk over the years, everybody's probably a little different. If somebody were to say, okay, I'm going to vent my finances to see what I need to live on so that I can sort of project what I need in the quieter months. How often do you sit down and look at what your incoming and outgoing looks like? Once a month, you know, once a quarter, what does that look like? Is it different for everybody?
No, I would say as a business owner, you want to be able to say what came in at least in the quarter. And again, some people get stuck in that trap of only doing it during tax time or right before the end of the year, and then they're stuck doing maybe some bad things, we'll get into that later, that don't make sense for taxes because they're trying to rush. So the more often you meet with yourself before your accountant, again, we jump to accountant and that sounds intimidating. They're hard to get a hold of. There's less of them in the world now. And that's a real hurdle out there for people nowadays. So to have all your ducks in a row first so that when you reach out to an accountant, if you can find that rare unicorn accountant, well, then you're going to use their time more efficiently. Your bill might be a little less. You're going to know your numbers to plan a little better. So that's where I would start with you, the business owner, have to own it, know your numbers first, and then we'll shift to that phase of working with an accountant and having that quarterly check-in hopefully with them too.
And we see it all the time too, where the business owners will say things like, oh, I'm so busy, I just haven't had a chance to do it. So you have to make it a priority. Otherwise,
I would have thought you would do that once a month. Like maybe
you,
at the end
you
of
could.
Month,
I think Tony's saying at least quarterly. Mm-hmm. But monthly is fine too. And depending upon your business, maybe you only bill quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense to tie it into your billing cycles. So yeah. It just depends on the entity.
And while we're out there too, again, that might be the bookkeeper doing that monthly or someone, you know, just the monthly, what came in, went out is a different idea than reviewing your quarterly finances. So there's going to be that normally what's in the till at the end of the day financing or financials. And then what came in and went out over this last year? What went in and went out over the last quarter? That way you can make better decisions, hopefully. So how you're pricing your subscriptions. You know, if my costs are going up, do I need to adjust that cost? That's really important to catch early on, not just missing taxes or things like that, but also, you know what, am I running a profitable business or not? You wouldn't want to wait till the end of the year to find out you lost money.
Right. Are there specific tools that we can kind of give people tips to use? I know we talk about a lot about it in our own business for financial planning on a personal level. If somebody's sitting there and going, you know, they're using the old spreadsheet, is there a better way to manage those numbers?
Oh, there's a lot of great softwares that are out there. There's too many to list. But yeah, I would encourage automation as much as possible. So you're more verifying things than you are manually entering transactions. That's huge.
You know, like what kind of automation? You don't need to name companies. But
no, just tracking expenses and categorizing it for
so
you.
Like budgeting.
But yeah, it kind of builds out your balance sheet and your income statement as you go versus you having to figure it all out mm-hmm. and do it manually. So there's tons of tools to do that.
Mm-hmm. And that's where depending upon, and I'll think about, take it back to who you bank with. So depending upon your business bank account, and we'd encourage that, have that separate bank account set up. Some of them brag about the different tools they offer. That way you can get in there and see these things, monitor transactions a lot easier because there's more than just the transactions in and out. But you know what? What does it cost me for each, you know, Frisbee that I make? How much is that large Frisbee compared to the small one? You want to know that, especially if you're giving them out on a monthly subscription by the thousands. Mm-hmm. That's really important to know if that cost changed by a couple cents or not.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about this in other podcasts, but how does someone find a balance and between projecting what they need to run their business for the next month and saving for retirement, especially when they're 30?
So I can't wait to jump on that one because this is the idea and you really have to, but it's a couple steps we have to follow along. The first piece is separate the business from your personal finances. Because if you're the business owner and you're living and dying through the business, you're doing it wrong. You've got to separate the two. And what we can do by that is start off with the business. You've got your first sales. Begin a business cash reserve. Think about yourself, the employee. Again, taxes aside, I'm not saying you're taking a salary or a W-2, but there's money you're going to take out of that business to live on. Think of that almost like your salary. If you can structure your cash reserve, your salary, in the business so that, you know what, if the business has those slow off-season months, mm-hmm. I can still take my salary, but then on the personal side, you still want to have your own reserve for when things get interrupted in the business, you're not struggling again. So it's a couple layers, whereas normally you might say, I'm going to have my cash reserve, my investments. Well, when you're a business owner, I think you add on that extra layer, and then that really helps when you have that interruption. You're running a little bit more stable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the same time, I've had business owners tell me, that ties up some cash, Tony. What am I doing?
Exactly.
It does.
That's what my brain is sitting here wondering how you handle that.
That's where the discipline part comes in.
Yep.
So do you pay yourself a salary then? Do you say, you know, just like you would receive from an employer, do you allocate a certain same amount twice a month or once a month to pay yourself out of your business account? Is that how you do that?
Well, I think it depends on the phase you're out of life and the business. If it's a side business still and you have your, I'll say your full-time W-2 job, leave everything in there, keep investing it. if this is the phase where, you know what, I'm scraping to get by, I need to take the minimum you have to take to live on. If you, the business owner, know, hey, this is rolling now, we're doing good, I can afford to pay myself more, great, do that. Again, that's really more on the pulse of the business.
Does it have
owner.
To be the same amount every month, or can you pay yourself different amounts?
No, that's the pro and the con to it, right? Because it can get, you can decide, which is wonderful, you're in control. But what if you make the wrong call?
Yeah.
Take out too much, too little. Because there are tax implications on both sides of that. So I think just continuing to be aware of where you're at. I hear it all the time too from business owners. Again, the whole excuse about being busy. You're going to get to a point if it's successful where you need to delegate. Mm-hmm. You need to move some things around, use a bookkeeping team. Maybe your CPA has that wing in their office where you can actually hire somebody to do the bookkeeping. And you can focus on driving the business. Because when you get started, you're doing everything. You're the founder, you're the marketer, you're the compliance person, you're the whatever you go through. Go down the list, right? Yeah. You're your own accountant. You're wearing all the hats. And so at some point, giving up some of that control is hard for people to do that. But if you're going to try and grow and scale, that's what you need to do.
So talking about taxes, and we're not CPAs. We say that all the time. But is the taxation, does it look different from a business perspective as far as paying out than it does personally? I mean, why is some business probably pay a lot of taxes for certain services and goods more than others, I would assume, right?
So if we're sticking with the subscription theme, I would say most of those, Tony, in the small business world would be pass-through entities. So the business is not really paying the tax. It's flowing through to the individual, right? But there's bigger, think about YouTube and the massive corporations that have subscriptions, right? It's very different in the corporation world. But small business-wise, the taxes are not paid at the business level. They're paid at the individual level.
Consumer.
Yeah.
The subscriber.
No, I'm saying the business owner.
Oh.
So the income coming in from the subscriptions.
Yeah.
They're not going to pay tax at their, ABC LLC company. It's going to flow through to their personal tax return.
And that's
where they pay the tax at personal rates. That's what most of these small businesses would be structured like. But corporation world's a little different.
To back up a little, I think, to the nature of your question, if I got a dollar from my W-2 job working for a Fortune 500 company, that's going to be taxed with no negotiations. That dollar's taxed at my tax rate. But if I get a dollar of income from my business, as Tyler was saying, well, then it really depends. How is it structured? What expenses did I have that year? What expenses am I accelerating maybe or claiming early? Did I have a lot of expenses the year before? So it doesn't, I hate to say a dollar isn't a dollar anymore, but because of the way the tax return and the tax system comes in, you might actually get $1.10 back. Mm-hmm. You might actually only get 50 cents. Mm-hmm. So it really is subjective now. That's why taxes matter so much too in the business world, because if you're doing it right, you're hopefully stretching that same dollar a lot further.
Mm-hmm. And the record keeping is so important, right? That's really at the crux of this. I mean, if you're selling cookies, you're inventorying those at the end of the day or the end of the month, and have opportunities to save on taxes if you're doing it right.
There's going to be a couple less if I'm doing the inventory, but all right. Yes. As we think it through, the idea of take that example. You're sitting there all day. You woke up early. You started the dough. You're going through it. You're cleaning at the end of the night. I mean, where's the time to sit there and account for how many did I sell today? How many were left? That's the important part you were saying too, Tyler, of either have a process, delegate those important things, and you have to identify what's important.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those numbers that you're going to need later, they aren't screaming at you sometimes. The income in, that might scream at you.
Yeah.
The expenses might. But you know what? Some of those side things that, did I have to do that? Was that a one-time expense? How did that play in? I had to buy the pans. I had to buy the mixer. Does that affect every cookie going forward or just my initial business cost? And these are where the taxes and the side of having an expert come in can really help you, because how you treat that mixer may mean the difference of a profit that year or paying a little taxes and being break even.
Yeah, good point. I keep hearing the word discipline and process. It seems to me they work hand in hand. The processes kind of force you to be disciplined. If you do something on an automated level the same way, you're creating good habits.
You're spot on. Yeah,
definitely.
Okay. Talking about retirement programs. So if you've got a subscribed business, you don't necessarily have a 401k like you would through an employer. So let's give people some ideas of how they can save in a parallel way.
Yeah, this applies to really any business owner. So if somebody that's not a W-2 employee, but whether it's a subscription-based model or sales of another kind or whatever, you have opportunities to determine what type of retirement plan would be best for you. So again, going down that order of operations, business cash reserve, is that in place first? What's the next 6 to 12 months look like in terms of your expenses?
Can I stop you for a second? Yeah. So we speak our language, but to somebody listening to this, the layperson who's getting ready to open a business, cash reserve, let's kind of paint a picture of what that means. I mean, we don't like to give hard numbers, but let's give a little bit of a visual for those of us who are contextual.
Yeah, you look at your expenses. You know what? At the end of this week, I've got $100 coming up of expenses. I need that $100 in my reserve because I know what's upcoming. I've got that. That's one kind of way of thinking about cash flow, cash reserve. But then there's the other of, I don't know I have that $100 coming, but I expect sometimes when I have that surprise, it costs me $100. So if I have a couple hundred back, well, even though I don't know that it's part of my planned cash flow, when I have that interruption or that surprise, that's what my cash reserve is for. And I was trying to tie it into, you usually look at your expenses, you know, it's reflexive. You know, could you say I want $500,000 cash reserve? You could, but again, be real perhaps on what's my income, what are my expenses? Mm-hmm. If I had a big surprise, what's the likelihood it's going to cost me that?
Great. Okay. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Tyler.
No, that's
so
great.
Back to the retirement program.
I don't remember what I was saying. Right. Yeah, there's different types of retirement plans.
Yeah, so. You save in your bucket.
Yeah,
I remember where you were at.
Yeah, so you kind of go down the priority list, right, of what's important. Cash reserves top of the list, whether it's personal or business, in our opinion. Have you protected the business? So that comes at a cost if you're going to use insurance to shift the risk of something happening to an insurance policy versus your own money. So there's expenses there. So go down your list and really analyze, do I have my reserve in place? Are my expenses covered? And you can pick however long you want to look out. You know, do I have in the next 6 months paid for type of thing for my expenses? But you work your way down, and the retirement plan is a good expense in the sense that you're paying yourself first. Mm-hmm. So you could use what's called a simple IRA. There's SEP IRAs. There's 401k plans.
You're trying to give them another job, aren't you,
yeah,
Tyler?
Whoa, that's a lot to administer, right? There's a ton there. So depending upon what type of business, what the cash flow is, how much you can actually save, that steers the conversation of which plan's right for you.
Where does somebody go to receive counsel as to which one in that alphabet soup works best for them?
The financial planner.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a team approach with the planner and hopefully a good CPA.
Yeah. Well, and that's where if you're talking, and I might push back a little, because if you're waiting till tax time and talking to your CPA about it, usually everything's about deferred taxes now. Mm-hmm. And we see that with some people now when they're 63, they're coming up on 65, every dollar they have saved for retirement is in a pre-tax account. So they wanted to deduct everything along the way, not pay their tax. Great, good. But at the same time, you're going to have to pay that tax at some point. And the bet was you'd be in a lower tax rate when you were retired. But that's not always the case. And if you're not saving that money on the side that you're benefiting from your tax savings, you're going to have a tax bomb later on in life too. So that's where the idea of, have I funded some of my other buckets, even my IRAs personally? You know, maybe I had the opportunity to fund a Roth IRA for me or my spouse or I, or maybe fund that brokerage account. You know, if you're a business owner and you're really hoping to retire early, 59 and a half might be 10 years past when you wanted to sell the business. So to be able to have that pot of money that you can access, because a lot of the retirement plans we were mentioning, the simples, the 401ks, things like that, those are designed for you to get that money back after 59 and a half. So depending upon your goals in the business, you may have to balance that of, what are my goals? When am I going to retire and need this money? Or, you know what, this has been a wonderful windfall of a business. I can defer it all for later, set up a different plan.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes it's better to pay the tax today. It goes against what the CPA would tell you, though.
Yeah, that's the antithesis of everything I've heard and learned.
Especially if there's debt out there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we see that with business owners. I mean, we know it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're running your business. Cash flow is one thing. It gets out of hand. You have a new project. It's exciting. You look at that cash reserve and you rate it. That money that was there for reserve purposes, tax purposes. We know business owners were, you know, you're an entrepreneur in your spirit. You're a risk taker. So you're doing things because you think it's going to be best and work out for you. But when it doesn't, that's when these issues come up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, talking about inventory and business deductions, we're in the vein of taxation. People can write off their supplies and their the cost of doing business to a certain point. And again, we're not CPAs, but can we give people a little bit of a visual of how to avoid misclassifying personal versus business expenses? Is there a
Well, it starts with having the separate accounts set up first. And then what you're speaking to is the cost of goods sold. Is there's a cost up front, whether it's inventory. You got to go buy those t-shirts first before you can sell them, right? That's an expense. And so depending upon where you're at in the tax year or the calendar year, it might make sense to accelerate those purchases. For example, if you're in December and you're expecting a big January, but December, you've got some other income coming in that you want to offset, maybe you buy the t-shirts then and you keep them in the inventory and you sell them the next year. So there's things you can do to negotiate your tax bill, but having the separate accounts set up is critical from the tracking and just managing, being able to make those decisions. I call it being document ready. And if you're scrambling to figure out where everything's at, you're not going to be able to make good decisions.
Mm-hmm. I can't help. I'm smiling here. I'm laughing because I'm thinking if you're going through this, you're probably watching a lot of financial videos, different things pop up in the algorithm. You're probably seeing a lot of buy this vehicle and here's how your LLC can own this and do that. And my gosh, you think about that and you relay it back to, is that fraud? I mean, how are you doing this? Mm-hmm. You don't just get to write off the cost of a vehicle because you own a business. Mm-hmm. You need to document, how did I use it in the business? Just slapping a logo on the side of it isn't always business use. It really depends on the kind of vehicle, what you were doing with it. I mean, it really gets in depth where the idea of, oh, I'm going to pay for my business with my LLC and deduct it all, and this is how the wealthy do everything, is not true, because you have to have a business purpose for it, or the IRS will blow that up. You will pay the tax on it plus some penalties. So the idea of, you know what, are there right ways to do this too? There definitely are. And you're probably hearing a lot of wrong ways too.
But Tony, everything I do is business, right? How many times do you hear that?
From an entrepreneur, a lot.
Yeah. I get why they say that, because their mind's constantly on the business. But you're sitting there having lunch with your kid. That's not business, right? Unless your kid's in the business. But the point being is you can get—
That's a business owner talking there, too.
You can go down a rabbit hole with it and get to the extremes. And so you got to protect yourself first, right? Have the right guardrails in place.
Okay.
And there are a lot of goodies. There are a lot of things you can do to take advantage the right way. But again, I know there are a lot of bad advice out there.
Where does somebody go for a list of that? I mean, obviously you have a conversation with your CPA, but is there a resource that people can use, a website that we can send them to kind of research this, or a topic maybe to look for?
Unfortunately, IRS.gov is, if you stacked all the pages up, I think it goes to the moon now.
Yeah.
So the idea of, with your business being specific to you, the type of LLC, that's why you hire the expert. That's why you talk to a CPA, a financial planner, especially if you're living through your business.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the idea of, it's not all just taxes. This has got to be able to take care of things when maybe I'm disabled and I can't run the business. Maybe I pass away. Mm-hmm. I have kids or I have family too. And you know what? They're not there to run the business. What happens if I'm not there? These are all the other things that, if you're the entrepreneur, were consumed with that next sale and that next quarter, it's easy to miss out. So have the experts.
Okay, finally, that was a great segue to the last thing I want to talk about is, I think this kind of falls under succession planning in some ways. But if somebody has a subscription business that's sort of a side hustle at first, and it starts to really take off, is there a timeline by which it's safe for them to kind of kick their other career to the curb and jump in head first, or is that subjective?
I'd say subjective. It just depends on the history. And if you have one good month, that's probably not long enough to say, all right,
you're not tracking it for, are you tracking it for 6 months to see if it's sustainable, or a year?
Well, I think that, again, kind of depends, because when we've gone through this analysis, helping others do it, you look at, what's the income from the business now? Is it there?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? If it's still just a kernel of an idea, it's probably not time to turn in the W-2 job and the paperwork for retirement yet. But you know what? I've been doing this for 2 years. My regular job feels like it's just wasting my time. It's annoying me because I have things I need to do and the money's not good enough. It's pretty obvious in that case. Yeah. And if you're somewhere in the middle, working with a planner to say, you know what, if I miss out on this retirement contribution or this match, what if I have to pay for my own health insurance?
Right.
Those are the things that, if I'm planning to make $100K from my business, I already make $100K, it's not a wash.
Mm-hmm.
You have to account for those other things.
Great point. Mm-hmm. Yep.
What happens if somebody has a subscription business or side hustle and they pass away?
Really depends on how they set it up.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be seamless.
Is it separate estate planning for their business or is it tied into their personal?
It all comes back to the personal. But yes, at the business level, there are things like operating agreements, which would state things that happen in the event of death or disability. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the guideline to start with. And you mentioned kids earlier too. There's you can, if things are successful and it's proven, you can actually incorporate the kids as owners and adult children of yourself into the business as an owner. So you have a natural succession onto the next generation. Now, whether or not the income continues at the level that the founder started it at is a whole other question.
Yeah.
Whether or not they can afford to pay you what it's worth too.
Yeah, sure.
Don't sell yourself short worrying about giving it to the kids. That's real though.
Yeah.
That's your retirement for the next 30, 40 years. And plenty of business owners have sold short to the kids and you can't go back to them or you don't feel right going back to them later. Yeah. So make sure that they can pay for it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that means they worked in it. They're doing the right thing. That's why you're giving them the business, because they're the right person to take it over.
Give them the business. Give them the business.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. And we hope you catch us on the next podcast.
Media. Think big.